versus Pease. This is a certified case, so the government will go first.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Major Suzanne Dempsey, and along with Colonel Mark Jamieson, I represent the United States. Chief Judge Erdman, with your permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. Remand is appropriate for two reasons. First, factual sufficiency review cannot include any matters not presented to the fact finder. And second, even if the Court acted within the scope of Article 66C, its new standard limits prosecutions, is inconsistently applied, and creates ambiguity. This case requires remand to the service court to conduct a proper factual sufficiency review under a standard.
Would you repeat number two, please?
Yes, Your Honor. Even if the court acted within Article 66C, its new standard limits prosecutions, it's inconsistently applied, and it creates ambiguity.
Well, aren't those policy arguments? Isn't that something you direct to Congress? If you don't like what they did, it may be ambiguous, but, I mean, the statute may be ambiguous. I mean, aren't these policy arguments you direct to Congress?
No, Your Honor, because under Leak specifically, the court, if it, Article 66C is incorrect, then the case is not yet
final.
Well,
but you're not really saying that. You're saying this is bad, it's ambiguous, and it limits prosecutions. Those are policy arguments. I mean, if they erred, if there's legal error, tell us. But simply saying this will have a bad effect on the government is a policy argument.
Correct, but as in Leak, when the remand was required because the court would not infer whether or not it was done correct in law, and that's why under Leak it was remand was required. Just like in this case, the standards that are applied were incorrectly applied. So in this case, requires remand to conduct a proper factual sufficiency review under a standard that is confined to the facts, the law, and legal definitions that were presented to that fact finder.
Well, now, the legal definition as to the term competent, the military judge told the panel that they were to use their own experience, essentially, in defining that word because it wasn't defined anywhere else.
Correct, Your Honor.
Which is what they did, supposedly.
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, however.
So how then, under that instruction and under your argument that the CCA has to follow the same definitions, how can they do that when it was not defined in the record anywhere and the members presumably did exactly what the military judge said? And the CCA undertook their own definition. But nobody can tell us now what the members' definition was. Under your scenario, that can never be reviewed.
In terms of just looking at factual sufficiency review, the court's decision was based entirely on factual sufficiency.
Well, if so, we can't review that, can we?
Your Honor, this court can, under Leak, review in whether or not the legal principles were correctly applied. And in this case, the court expanded the record for purposes of its factual sufficiency review.
I thought your argument was the CCA had to apply the same legal standards and definition that the members applied. And my question is, how do we know that? How do we know what that is?
Yes, Your Honor. This can best be illustrated by considering the record for purposes of Article 66C review as a box. And the service court is confined to considering the facts and law that's contained within that box. And this, the court's precedent here has.
Well, what the chief judge is saying is that in that box there was no definition of competent because the members were told to use their own experience. So based on your argument, they couldn't make any decision because there was nothing in the box.
Or they couldn't err because they had nothing, you know, whatever they did, there was nothing to do. Either they can't err, or they automatically err, or there's nothing here for us to review. I don't know quite what the government is saying.
Under Washington, the court needed to determine whether it was independently convinced of the accused's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And it needed to do that based on the confines of this box. And as Beatty illustrated, is that it's easiest to illustrate what the box contains is by the Beatty looked outside the box for evidence.
The box is empty. There's nothing in there.
He was defined
because there's no standard. So where does that leave the CCA, and where does that leave us?
The CCA must look at the facts and the law as it was instructed upon by the members.
Okay, facts, no law. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, how can they err, or alternatively, how could anyone not err?
This is similar to Holt, where under the Article 66C power, where the court then changed the quality and nature of the evidence by considering a sentence appropriateness under Article 66C, and that was inappropriate because it changed the character and nature of that box and the evidence that was within that box. That's exactly what the court did by creating a definition that's found nowhere in the statutory text, is found nowhere in the military judge's instructions.
Now, the military judge, though, instructed that the panel could use its experience to come up with what it defined it for itself, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Now, why is that not also within the purview of the CCA to do? If you're correct that they have to view things under the facts and laws that went to the panel, then why are they not in the same position as the panel with respect to determining what the word means?
They were, but then that goes over and it seems more of a question of law and determining whether the conviction and the findings are correct in law as opposed to correct in fact. When we're talking about fact.
Now, as far as in law, that's a little different than saying they're bound by what the facts were before the trial judge. In law, they're a body of law as well as the trial judge was. So are they really confined to what he said? Even if he said something, which he didn't.
Yes, Your Honor. In terms of factual sufficiency, the service court is confined to the record as it's presented to it.
Right. That's fine. But what I'm wondering is, you're not saying that they got any other facts. You're saying they used a different definition of a term in the law. Is that not what you're saying?
Correct, Your Honor. They applied a different definition, which therefore exists.
How do we know they applied a different definition?
Because it's not as what was contained within that box. It's not what was in the instructions.
The instruction says use your own experience. They used their own experience.
But in effect, they are creating a different standard that is outside the box.
How do we know it's different? That's the question we all seem to be troubled by, or several of us, that you keep saying it's different, but we don't know what the panel did. We'll never know what the panel did. So how do we know it's different? Does it just become everything's unreviewable because we can't know?
No, Your Honor, but in terms of factual sufficiency, they changed the quality of those findings.
But didn't they, counsel, focus on specific factual reasons that they found as a basis to determine that either the government didn't prove to their satisfaction that they were incapable of consenting and or that they didn't prove that this person would have reasonably have known that they weren't capable of consenting, right? I mean, they pointed to specific things.
Correct, Your Honor, and it was all based on this new standard that it created under a factual sufficiency power, which is not permissible under factual sufficiency.
But why wouldn't the facts that someone ignored the command from Shore Patrol to return and told someone to not do certain sexual activities because it was painful and testified that they enjoyed parts of it, why wouldn't those be facts that in common sense or people's experience would support determination that the facts here were insufficient?
Those facts may support it, but it's for the lower court to make that decision.
But they did.
They made it under a standard that was not contained within the record. And they made it based solely on that decision, on that their new standard.
So
the problem.
Give us the standard the CCA should have used. How should they have defined those terms that weren't defined by the military judge when he said, use your own experience? What should the CCA have plugged in when they reviewed the factual sufficiency under that standard?
Under factual sufficiency, it should have looked just at the record and determined whether it's independently convinced. The court should have, if it wanted to address the instructions themselves and to say whether those were correct, it should have looked at instructional error.
But the panel has the luxury that an appellate court does not have. The panel can decide and must decide without issuing an opinion. the CCA had to issue an opinion as to why they did what they did. Now, if each of them is acting on their own experience to define the term, you will have, in every case, no record of what the panel did, and yet you'll have a specific record of what the CCA did if they apply some standard and tell us what they did. It doesn't mean that they're doing something inconsistent. They're just doing something the panel didn't have to do. We don't know why the panel reasoned like they did, do we?
Also, the problem with what the panel service court did is that it stated it needed to look no further than the words of the statute itself. But then, without finding any ambiguity, it decided to define and redefine statutory terms.
What's wrong with focusing on cognitive ability to appreciate the nature of the conduct and mental and physical ability to make and communicate a decision? What's wrong with those things coming into a determination as to whether someone's competent or not? I mean, aren't those exactly the things you would hope that they would look to?
Those are proper things, but it's not what's in the statute, and it's not what was presented to the lower court. So in terms of factual sufficiency, that's not the question.
Well, competent isn't defined. What are they supposed to do?
Didn't they use their own background in defining that?
They are permitted to do that, but that's not a question of factual sufficiency. That's going outside.
It's a standard on which to judge, gauge factual sufficiency.
They have to apply the factual sufficiency, right? I mean, it has to be tied to something.
You have to define the law before you can do that.
It is, but in the manner that they defined the law, the court looked outside of the trial record, and that's the problem.
How can they not? I mean, if the trial record is empty, if the trial record doesn't speak to the question, is this not then become a purely standardless delegation to do justice? Under the guise of factual sufficiency, I don't know what the CCA is supposed to do here. Especially not since they didn't know what the panel did either.
Well, it's unclear also what the service court did here, because it stated it looked no further than the words of the statute, but then without finding ambiguity, it went to define. But under statutory interpretation, it needed to look no further. If there was no ambiguity, it did not need to go ahead and define. But it didn't state whether there was ambiguity, whether it needed to be clarified. And then in doing so, it also...
Well, now you seem to be saying something else. You're not saying that they went beyond whatever it was the panel, the judge did. You're saying that they did more than they needed to with respect to statutory construction. What are you saying?
That would be more towards the second certified issue. So if this court agrees that it was okay for the court to interpret the law for purposes of factual sufficiency, then the standard that the court created is still incorrect.
Well, is it the government's position that it's not okay?
Correct, Your Honor.
That in finding factual sufficiency under 66, a CCA cannot have recourse to statutory standards? I mean, then what are we left with? Is this simply a board for the correction of records, or what?
Looking outside the record, it's a question of law and determining whether the finding is correct in correct in law as opposed to correct in fact. Factual sufficiency review is confined to that record. Correct in law would be a broader application. And that's where the statutory instruction comes into play.
Correct in law, don't they?
Correct.
Right, under 66.
But if there's a question about that, then it needs to be remanded for the court to clarify whether they're doing a factual sufficiency review or a legal sufficiency review.
Counsel, could you devote your remaining time to your second issue?
Yes, Your Honor. And specifically, the standard that the court applied is internally inconsistent. And this can be demonstrated through the court, through its incapable of consenting definition, created a make and communicate standard where the United States has to show both that the person had the physical or mental ability to both make and to communicate a standard. But that's illogical, because in the prior sentence, to be able to give an agreement which is capable, the person has to also be able to make and communicate a decision.
And what's wrong with that? Doesn't that make sense?
No, Your Honor, because a person, if they're capable, and that requires them to be able to make and to communicate a decision, and then if they're not capable, if they cannot, and if they don't make and they don't communicate, then you're left with what if they can do one and not the other? And so in that sense, it limits prosecutions when if the United States cannot show one or the other, we cannot prosecute the case under the lower court standard.
Right.
So it's limiting prosecutions, and it's illogical.
How is it illogical?
Yeah. I mean, if you're competent but you can't communicate it, and the government can prove that, you know, that's there. If the person is unable to make that communication, that's one of the things they look at.
But under the lower court standard, it requires the United States to prove both, that they have to lack the ability to
it
make and
like
communicate
it.
The standard.
Well, I have a hard time conceiving of a situation in which you couldn't make but you could communicate. So, I mean, aren't they two sides of the same coin? You seem to be saying this puts a burden of proof on the United States that it shouldn't have, or are you saying a burden of proof in the United States that the statute doesn't provide for?
Both, Your Honor.
Both. Well, of course, shouldn't have is a policy matter. Not contemplated by the statute is a matter of law. Okay, so where are we?
It also, that's...
I thought that they said to be competent, you have to be able to do both.
Yeah.
And you're incompetent if you can fail to do either.
If you lack the ability to both make and communicate a decision.
No, either. It's either.
It says
an incompetent person, a person who lacks either the mental or physical ability to consent. Either.
Under incompetent, but under incapable of consenting, which is what the United States has to show. It requires the United States to show that they had lacked the physical or mental ability to both make and to communicate a decision. It requires...
That's not what this opinion says. It says that they have to be able to do both. They have to be
capable.
Right.
And then the reverse one, it says
incapable. If they are unable to do either, then they're incompetent.
If they're unable to both make and communicate... But there could be a situation when a person could be physically unable to make a decision, or physically unable to communicate, but they could make the decision, but be physically unable due to intoxicant or substance that they could be unable to communicate at, where the United States could not meet its burden under that case.
I'm not reading this opinion the same way that the United States is.
Even then, if
you'd like to read it in such a limited fashion, be my guest, but I don't read it to say that at all.
Yes, sir. I understand, but this also...
Counsel, if you could briefly conclude.
Yes, Your Honor. The lower court's factual sufficiency review is flawed. Therefore, as in Leek and Beatty and other cases, remand is appropriate in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The court will now hear from the appellee.
Chief Judge and judges of the court, may it please the court, I am Eric Montalvo. I am joined with Carol Thompson and Lieutenant Christopher McMahon, and we represent Petty Officer Second Class Jacob Pease. taking a step back to what happened here, what did the court do? So as the court has acknowledged, there was no definition. So they were fact finders, and they were told to figure it out. And so given that fact that they were advanced fact finders, they understand how to construe law and interpret things, they did what they were trained to do. And I'm going to slaughter this, but no sector socies. They looked at the statute, and it made sense. They went to the different parts of the statute. They looked at what the words in the statute were talking about. It talks about incapacity, able to consent, the inability to be competent. So you're looking at all of these different terms and you put it together, and what makes someone, how do you know if someone's consenting? They demonstrate a physical or mental or oral. There's some communication either through the body or through the mouth or some gesture that indicates that someone's wanting to participate in the activity that they're engaged in. And that's what the court did. They looked at the terms and they said, you know, here's a piece here. This is talking about physicality. Here's a piece here. This is talking about competence. This is a piece here talking about whether or not they want to participate. And they looked at the whole thing and said, these are the three pieces. And the cognitive ability comes to the ability to engage in a freely agreement. And so when you're talking about this freedom to engage in this agreement, there is this cognitive ability. That means a decision is made. I want to participate in this. And so we look at this particular case, and we look at the facts, as the court has acknowledged, and there are plenty of facts to suggest, just from a mistake of fact defense, you know, were these ladies potentially interested in the sexual activity? One of them said, I wanted to be with you. I kissed you. I walked with you. I stood up with you. I walked up the plank. I put my ID card in. I laid down. I held myself up. I told you that this hurt. It didn't hurt. So when the court had to look at the facts, they determined that there were sufficient facts here that did not, the government did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that these particular individuals did not consent in the activity. And they did so through the statute, through their judicial mandate to review the law, I mean, the facts as they were in the case. There's not one fact that they drew upon. And if you look at some of the government citations, for example, you know, Holt, well, that was when the court went back and said, you know what, we don't like what the judge did in terms of suppressing the evidence, so we're going to change that and make our own determination as the evidence. Well, the court said you can't do that. You can't go outside the court. You can't do things that are not within the record.
Counsel, would you address the government talked about this in its brief, but seems to have soft-pedaled it in argument.
Yes, sir.
The contention that the problem in Issue 2 is that the CCA took standards that had been in effect and that had then been repealed by Congress. Remember, we're dealing with three different statutes here, and Congress has admittedly made a total mess of this thing. I was in at the beginning over there. We made a mess of it then. They've made a mess of it twice more. But anyway, you had a statute. Then you had a change in the statute that was substantially more detailed, and one could argue incorporated some of the standards the CCA incorporated. Then they changed it again and kicked most of that out. In the version that was in effect that's relevant to this case. And the government seems to argue that the problem is that the CCA incorporated stuff that had been repealed in what it did in this case. Although they, like I said, they haven't really argued that here. Can you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. So in this particular case, we start with the facts. And so are there facts that suggest there was the possibility of consent or that mistake of fact may lie on the part of the accused? So we do have those facts in the case. So we can't move forward unless we first determine that, because if they're unconscious or it's clear from the facts, it's one of the examples, a confession that she was intoxicated to the point she was unconscious. If we had those facts, we'd be having a potentially different discussion. Okay, in this particular case, we have facts that demonstrate that there was potentially consent and or mistake of fact. Then what's the court to do? The military judge says, figure it out. That was his command of the law, figure it out. And that's exactly what CCA had to do. They had to figure it out. And so if you look within the statute, it talks about mental disease or defect. Mental disease or defect. Or physical disability. That's what the legislature, in their wisdom, put into the statute. Right next to that, they talk about incapable of consenting. Incapable. So you have to determine what means incapable.
Well, but did they inappropriately look at the repealed version of Article 120 to get some of that guidance? I think that's what the issue is.
Well, according to the record and the opinion that they drew, they outlined exactly what they did. They told you what words they looked to. They talked about the penal language that's in the statute. They said that this must be consistent across the penal language. We're not increasing the burden. We're going to keep the burden at the same level. We're looking at the consent, which is defined as a freely given agreement. And so you draw upon this cognitive component. And they put that together and said, well, this must mean there has to be a physical piece to this. There has to be some mental competency, and there had to be some acknowledgement that they were participating in activity.
So what is the consequence if the CCA, in doing that, used some of the terms that Congress had taken out of the statute? Is there a consequence to that?
Yes, Your Honor. In a hypothetical, if they had done that, maybe that's disconcerting, but that's not what they did. What we have, unfortunately or fortunately, is the fact that you have one panel that doesn't have to write how they came to their conclusion, and then we have another fact-finding panel that did. And so this fact-finding panel told you what they did. And so I believe that they rate some deference in that regard. And so, you know, we have to go with the record that we have. And in the record, everything that they spoke of is here in the statute.
Are you conceding that it would be error if they had used the words that were taken out of the old statute? And let me preface that by saying Congress did not say you can't use these. They just didn't say that you have to anymore.
I think it would be error if the court applied law that was not applicable to the case.
I'm talking about in defining the term.
Well,
that's what we're really talking about here, is defining the statute.
Yes, not, but. So competence is a legal term of art. And so it would have been nice if they had defined it, and the statute did not do that. So in the court's experience, they had to draw from their knowledge and experience of how to interpret.
And would it necessarily be error if they had drawn from a prior statute to shape their application of their experience as to what the term meant?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And I believe that, you know, just touching upon the affidavit from the president of the panel, that's what the members may have done. They may have drawn upon their training and experience, you know, that, hey, one beer means you're, you know, not able to consent.
Should we be looking at that affidavit?
Well, in terms of if the government raises this issue that...
I mean, why we're not supposed to pierce the decision-making process.
No, Your Honor, but I would highlight the fact that if it's the case that the panel reviewed this as a DUI standard, then what they did was impermissible. And that is against and contrary to the law. And that is reviewable under 606. B, and that is, you know, as we know, drawn from the federal side, and that the case law does allow us to look at whether or not they misapplied the law. And if they brought law into the panel room that was not given to them, because they were not given DUI law, they were given the statute. And so if they applied DUI law in this case, they misapplied the law and didn't follow the
judge's instructions. I don't want to waste your time, but the circumstances drawn from the federal side are extremely narrow under which there could be any examination of this.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, do you agree that in order for an individual to be competent to consent under the CCA's definition, that they have to have three things: a cognitive ability to appreciate, a mental ability to make a communication, and a physical ability to make a communication? The government seemed to be concerned that they would have to prove all three of them, that if someone was mentally able to communicate but physically unable to communicate, that they could never make their case under the CCA standard. I don't read it that way.
I do not either, Your Honor. In this case, what the court did is said for the government, as long as you can show one of the three, then that would be, you know, what you would
an
need to
incompetent
do.
Person.
That's correct. Yes, Your Honor.
So if they were cognitively unable to appreciate what they were doing, or if they were physically incapable of communicating, or mentally incapable of communicating, then they would be incompetent.
Right. Exactly, Your Honor. Consistent with the subparagraph B, which says mental disease or defect or physical disability. Because what the policy underneath this is, obviously, if someone, for example, they were given a date rape drug, and so they're incapacitated to the point, they may know what's going on, but they don't have the physical ability to communicate that, well, you would declare that incompetent. And then it would be a reasonable person to know that if I had given someone a date rape drug, that they could possibly participate, and then that would deprive them of a mistake of fact defense. So I think the way the court structured this, they allowed for that determination, that incompetence was a low level to allow the government to prove one of those three prongs, and then if then the defense would have to come along and say, well, wait a minute, no, she was competent because of these different things and those facts and circumstances.
Or I believe she was competent because of these things.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or he reasonably could have believed.
Reasonably could have believed, yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, under the definition of freely given agreement by the CCA, where does voluntariness come in to their definition?
Well, that is the cognitive component. I believe that's the way the use of the word cognitive in how they explained what they were accomplishing. So as we look to consent, again, it says the term consent means a freely given agreement to the a conduct at issue by a competent person. So what they were doing is they said, okay, what is competence, okay, physical and mental, and then how can I engage in an agreement? Well, there has to be some cognitive ability. The issue here is, does the person have a choice? Do they have the ability to make a decision to engage in the activity at that time? And so the hard case, of course, is in alcohol when you have this, levels that, at some point it does become impossible to make a decision. You're just so debilitated because of the alcohol that you cannot, make these
decisions. Okay, but how does that encompass the concept of a person giving consent but doing so out of fear? Strictly speaking about the CCA definition.
Sure. So if we move to a force or fear, right, so this is their physical or mental component. So if they are mentally not able to articulate stop because they are so in fear of their life, that is one of the prongs that the government would come forward in those facts. So they would say, in this case, there was a gun to her head. She was in so much fear that she could not articulate the stop or would not, and that would be the mental inability to do that. They would check off on that block. So to go back to the overall nature of the case, it's our position that the court, as well as the panel, was put in a difficult situation because there was a legal term of art that needed defined and was not defined. So the CCA did what it had to do, and it took what it was given. It analyzed the case within the facts and circumstances that it had and made what we believe to be an appropriate determination consistent with the different elements of the statute as they're contained, currently drafted, and subject to any further questions. Further questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The government have rebuttal.
Three quick points, Your Honor. Counsel is pointing to that the court had to just figure it out. Well, it didn't need to do it under its factual sufficiency power. As the Air Force Court in Jin, it was able to tackle the questions head on by considering under the instructional error, considering the constitutionality of it, and considering the factual sufficiency of the case under very similar circumstances as to what we have here. Also, and what the court did, is second point, is that it wrote a new bench book instruction for incapable of consenting, in a sense changing what the United States had to prove to be incapable of consenting. And in that sense, it changed what it had said for incompetent and changed it to an and standard under incapable of consenting.
You're not saying that future courts are required to follow this guidance of the CCA, are you?
Yes, Your Honor. They are, based on the court's interpretation of what the law is, rendering the other law that Congress enacted essentially obsolete, especially in the consent definition of what it means to give a freely given agreement, is that this is the new standard. This is the new definition in the Navy and Marine Corps for incapable of consenting.
Can you explain again what's wrong with the definition?
Yes, Your Honor. It's that it requires the United States to prove both make and communicate a decision under incapable of consenting standard. Where the United States would be able to show one but not the other, we could not bring charges under that case.
So if we don't read it that way, we should just say so.
Yes, Your Honor. But in terms of it's different than what it stated for incompetent, is that it took in for the same thing, as it both require an and it can't have that.
If it requires an and, that means if you are incapable of proving one of them, then you have met the standard that is created by requiring an and.
The United States,
if both A and B, and you don't prove A, then you've failed to meet the standard. But what's the problem with that?
Under incapable of consenting, the United States has to show that they lacked both the physical or mental ability to both make and communicate a decision. So we have to, the United States has to show that they lacked both under that standard.
No, you have to show that they lacked one or the other. I don't understand why you would have to. We're not following your reasoning on this, counsel.
If you can't prove one, then you can't prove both of them.
Obviously, you can't prove both of them.
There would be situations where the person would have one or the other, but not both. But under the definition of incapable of consenting, it requires the United States to show both, that they lacked both the physical.
We're not reading it that way.
Understood, Your Honor. And the third.
But you're welcome to engage in a higher burden of proof for yourself if you'd like.
And the third point is that the court then changed the standard when it's during this factual sufficiency review for ITSNSK, where they changed it from a cognitive ability standard to a manifestly unaware standard, which is also found nowhere in the statutory text, nowhere within the lower court's interpretation of the law, and which is problematic because there's a separate offense enacted by Congress for a person who is otherwise unaware. And that can't be what Congress intended, to have these two offenses mean the same thing. And that's another specific problem with what the court did in its analysis. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is now submitted. The court is adjourned until further order of the court.